Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading this morning, Canto 3, Chapter 32, verses 12 through 15, they're grouped together. Entanglement in fruitive activities. These verses we'll be discussing using the example of Lord Brahma, four Kumaras, Rishi and the great sages, using them as examples to show that wherever there is some even pinch of self-interest, the Sanskrit word is bheda, bheda drishtya. Bheda is separate. So achintya bheda, abheda. So bheda means separate. And drishtya, their vision is with some amount, to whatever degree, there's some amount of seeing oneself separate, interest separate from the Lord. That causes one, even in the most elevated of situations, to take birth again at the time of creation. That's the essence of the message coming up. You better watch out for that separate interest. And that connects with two other themes that were presented previously. Shukadeva Goswami is describing the difference between a Krishna conscious grihastha and worldly attached grihamedi. Worldly attached grihamedi is entangled in fruitive activities. That's the title of the chapter. So there are these two extremes, grossly attached, unattached and fully attached to Krishna. Going back seven chapters, Kapila Dev was saying to Devahuti, material attachment is like this, and describes it. Then he says that very same attachment, if reposed upon a sadhu, very same attachment reposed upon a sadhu brings release from the material circumstances. So, in the verses preceding these, Shukadeva Goswami has introduced a topic of those who worship Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha worship. So, Hiranyagarbha indicates Garbhadakshai Vishnu. Haranya means golden, like Hiranyakashipu. Golden, Haranya, Garbha. The form of Vishnu, that's the Lord of the universe, Hiranyagarbha. And with that, it brings in this position of Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Shiradakshaya Vishnu, the forms of worship of Vishnu, which is in the mode of goodness. Worship is in the mode of goodness, and the object of worship is transcendental. And because the object is transcendental, it can bring the worshipper also to transcendence. Shukadeva Goswami then describes the destination of Hiranyagarbha worshippers. That is, they're this unique position. It's like Paramatma realization. It's like the yogis. if those yogis that become successful yogis, not you know the commercial kind, but the successful yogi, he achieves that perfection of seeing the Lord of the heart. And in that position, that's the seeing is their worship. The fixing their mind is their worship. It's described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita in Tapaloka. That's what they do. They engage in meditation on the Supreme Lord and they see the Supreme Lord. They're still within this realm, the created realm, but they're meditation fans. They really like seeing the Supreme Lord. So they stay in a trance of meditation for a long time. And after that long time, they take a little break. They engage in very elevated philosophical discussions. And then they take another break. They take a little prasadam. And then they go back to meditation. Because they really like seeing the Supreme Lord in meditation. So here, in the previous verses, Kapila Dev says what their destination is. And what we heard was, after giving up their bodies, they enter into the body of Lord Brahma. And therefore, when Lord Brahma is liberated and goes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Brahman, such yogis can also enter into the kingdom of God. It doesn't say they automatically do, but that's something they can do. So, their qualification is the yogis who become detached from the material world by mechanical processes, practice of breathing exercises and control of the mind, they reach the planet of Brahma, which is far, far away. After giving up their bodies, they enter into the body of Lord Brahma. And therefore, when Lord Brahma is liberated and goes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Brahman, such yogis can also enter into the kingdom of God. There's no technology described here. What does it mean to enter into the body of Lord Brahma? So don't ask me. I don't know. But Lord Brahma is a very special personality and power to create personality. And as we know, he does some other amazing things. You know, he from his own body, he creates beings. From his body come four Kumaras, and from his body then come Lord Shiva, and from his body come the Marichi and the great sages, and from his body comes Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa. He's got a different kind of body than we have, and he has powers different than we have. And so living entities come from his body, and we're hearing here without any explanation some living entities enter within his body, and then when Brahma is liberated he goes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the verse that we read yesterday was text 11, which was, therefore, my dear mother, by devotional service, take direct shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated in everyone's heart. But two things. This is specific to Paramatma realization. However, devotional service requires a person, Bhagavan. So it's this Paramatma realization, where the yogi understands, well, it's the Lord of the heart, but actually it's Bhagavan. Must be like that, because otherwise, where is there the practical devotional service? So, unique position in so this is Satyug, the process is meditation. But how do you go from Paramatma realization to the stage of perfection, Bhagavan realization? Devotional service must be there for realization of Bhagavan. So, and that's what he's advocating specifically. And in the purport, Prabhupada speaks about the Vaishnava philosophers as well as the Mayavad philosophers. While different, there's the similarity is they both want to merge into the Supreme, but while still maintaining their identities. Without which, how can you have service? They want to keep their identity of lover, parent, friend, or servant. So it's these. It's not something that we're so familiar with, practice-wise. But how do you engage in service while you're in meditation? Mm-hmm. Because our process is Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam, and their process is consolidate the senses and, in a meditative position, somehow, big somehow have some relationship of service. Lover, parent, friend, or servant. And then, if you recall from yesterday, there was this discussion about the stage of oneness. And it means they stand on the same platform, servitor and served. So that plays into, it's a preamble. That rumbling sound that you heard, whatever exactly it means to be desiring to merge in the Supreme Brahman while maintaining your individual identity, whatever that means, and still engage in devotional service, that oneness of service because of standing on the same platform. Here comes something that's even more eyebrow-raising. What it says, I'll summarize what it says and then read it. After the end of creation, Lord Brahma and the great sages leave that position of being with Mahavishnu and again enter into the next creation in the same forms, doing the same services, if they have some data drishtya or self-interest, even a pinch of self-interest. So here's the verse. My dear mother, someone may worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a special self-interest. That's Bedha Drishtya. But even demigods such as Lord Brahma, sages such as the Sanat Kumar, and the great munis such as Marichi, have to come back to the material world again at the time of creation. When the interaction of the three modes of material nature begins, Brahma, who is the creator of the cosmic manifestation and who is full of Vedic knowledge, and the great sages, who are the authors of the spiritual path and the yoga system, come back under the influence of the time factor. they are liberated by their non-fruitive activities, and they attain the first incarnation of the Purusha, but at the time of creation, they come back in exactly the same forms and positions as they had previously. So watch out for Veda Drishtya. Separate interest. Purport, about a page and a half long. That Brahma becomes liberated is known to everyone, but he cannot liberate his devotees, meaning that those that worship him as a demigod. Demigods like Brahma and Lord Shiva cannot give liberation to any living entity, as it is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Only one who surrenders unto Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can be liberated from the clutches of Maya. Brahma is here called Adya Stira Charanam. Adya Stira Charanam. He is the original, first created living entity, and after his own birth, he creates the entire cosmic manifestation. He was fully instructed in the matter of creation by the Supreme Lord. Here, he is called Veda Garbha. Veda Garbha. Which means that he knows the complete purpose of the Vedas. He is always accompanied by such great personalities as Mrichi, Kashyapa, and the seven sages, as well as by great mystic yogis, the Kumaras, and many other spiritually advanced living entities. But he has his own interest. But he has his own interest, separate from the Lord's. Thus, Bheda, B-H-E-D-A, Drishtya, Bheda Drishtya means that Brahma sometimes thinks that he is independent. Sometimes. Thinks that he is independent of the Supreme Lord. Or, he thinks of himself as one of the three equally independent incarnations. Brahma is entrusted with creation, Vishnu maintains, and Rudra, Lord Shiva, destroys. The three of them are understood to be incarnations of the Supreme Lord, in charge of the three different material modes of nature. But none of them is independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here the word Bheda Drishtya occurs because Brahma has a slight inclination to think he is as independent as Rudra. Sometimes Brahma thinks he is independent of the Supreme Lord, and the worshipper also thinks that Brahma is independent. For this reason, after the destruction of the material world, when there is again creation by the interaction of the material modes of nature, Brahma comes back. Still the same paragraph. Although Brahma reaches the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the first Purusha incarnation, Mahavishnu, who is full with transcendental qualities, he cannot stay in the spiritual world. End of paragraph. The specific significance of his coming back may be noted. Brahma and the great rishis and the great master of yoga, Lord Shiva, are not ordinary living entities. They are very powerful and have all perfections of mystic yoga, but still they have an inclination to try to become one with the Supreme, and therefore they have to come back. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is accepted that as long as one thinks that he's equal with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's not completely purified or knowledgeable. In spite of going up to the first Purusha avatar, Mahavishnu, after the dissolution of the material creation, again, such personalities again fall down and come back to the material creation. Last paragraph. It is a great fall down on the part of impersonalists to think that the Supreme Lord appears within a material body, and that one should therefore not meditate upon the form of the Supreme Lord, but he should meditate instead on the formless. For this particular mistake, even the great mystic yogis or great stalwart transcendentalists also come back again when there is creation. All living entities, other than the impersonalists and monists, can directly take to devotional service in full Krishna consciousness and become liberated by developing transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such devotional service develops in the degrees of thinking of the Supreme Lord as master, as friend, as son, and at last as lover. These distinctions in transcendental variegatedness must always be present. End of purport. So what's the message? And the important thing is watch out for self-interest, separate self-interest. Nate vidu svartha gatim hi Vishnu. Prabhupada quoted that verse a zillion times. Prahlad Maharaj speaking to Hiranyakashipu, and in expanding on the verse, or expounding on the verse, Prabhupada points to the words sva artha. Artha means interest, and sva means one's own, so one's self-interest. And continuing, Prabhupada would say that self-interest is natural. Everyone has some self-interest because we have self-interest. But not knowing what one's real self-interest is, one reposes that self-interest tendency or propensity on wrong thing, and therefore is frustrated. And real self-interest is Vishnu, or pleasing, taking the position of servant of the Supreme in one of these mellows. So there are different types of the wrong kind of, or the misplaced self-interest, besides that one. And he doesn't do it as a list. You know, there's this type and there's that type, but he mentions in the prior section those that are worshippers according to the Vedas of demigods, religious, there's his activity is to enjoy material benefits by performing religious rituals for economic development and thereby ultimately satisfy the senses. He does not want anything more. Such persons work hard throughout life to become very rich and eat very nicely and drink by giving some charity for pious activity. They can go to a higher planetary atmosphere in the heavenly planets in the next life. But he does not want to stop the repetition of birth and death and finish with the concomitant miserable factors of material existence. Such a person is called the Grihamedi. So the religious performances, what we're getting is a breakdown of Anyabhilasha to Shunyam. So there's the unregulated, there's the regulated worshippers according to the Vedas. There are those that are desirous of becoming one with the Supreme Absolute Monism. Now we're even getting this further refinement of separate self-interest or misapplied self-interest, even with very, very elevated personalities, so elevated that after the dissolution of the universe, their residence is with Garbhadaksha Vishnu, Mahavishnu. But if they maintain some self-interest of any type, so he's identifying the types, such as thinking I'm independently powerful, I'm as powerful as Rudra, I'm as powerful as Vishnu, how such a person can go to Mahavishnu isn't clear to me, because he's supremely pure. How can someone not supremely pure be present with him? But in any case, although Brahma reaches the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the first Purusha incarnation, Mahavishnu, who is full with transcendental qualities, he cannot stay in the spiritual world. So, thinking oneself independent, an inclination to try to become one with the Supreme, remember from yesterday, the platform of oneness, try to become one with the Supreme in the wrong sense. So it's an elevated thought or desire to even think of something spiritual or the Supreme, supremely powerful person, but that tendency is there. Tendency is there. The marginal living entity has tendency. And if that tendency isn't addressed, tendency can manifest. And then, bhutva, bhutva, praliyate. Coming again and again. So that's very subtle, but it tells us something about entanglement and fruitive activities. It's, as I've often described, it's a stain that doesn't want to go away. And try and doesn't want to go away, and something scrubs some more and gets some more powerful bleach and detergent and scrub, and it doesn't go away. Tendency for some separate self-interest, which is Maya, it's not reality. Two things, just scriptural references. One is one of the Chatur Shloki verses of the Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9, says specifically, one who thinks, Vishnu speaking to Brahma, one who thinks that there is something that's of value, that's separate from me, know that to be my illusory energy, acting on that person. Maya is to think that there is something separate from the Supreme that has intrinsic value, or artha, and it's therefore desirable. That's Maya. So, covered by here. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, only one who surrenders unto Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God, can be liberated from the clutches of Maya. And as the second reference prior to that Chatur Sloki verse, Brahma prays to Lord Vishnu, or requests of Lord Vishnu a benediction, that when I engage in the act of creation of the universe, I don't fall under the illusion of thinking that I'm the creator of the universe, or that I'm the doer. That's that stain. I have some independent capacity to do something, whatever that something might be. Play the harmonium and sing a song, or cook in the kitchen, or create a universe, or drive to work, or, you know, whatever the something is that we might do, walk across the floor. We don't have any independent capacity. Thinking that we do is Maya. And the activities engaged in that consciousness has some, the consciousness of thinking independently has some reaction. So we're not only responsible for our gross actions, we're responsible for the consciousness behind those actions, not just refraining from certain things and doing certain things. That's all we have to do. There's consciousness behind those actions, and I'll just read some of these little phrases that speak about Bedha Drishtya again, and we'll close. First, there are terms or Sanskrit phrases that describe Brahma's position. Adya Stira Charanam, Charanam. He's the original created being. Veda Garbha. He knows completely the purpose of the Vedas. So what's the purpose of the Vedas? The purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. He knows perfectly. Even still, he, along with many others, have his own interests separate from the Lord's. Veda Drishtya means that Brahma sometimes thinks that he is independent of the Supreme Lord. Or he's equally independent as Rudra. Or he's independent of Lord Vishnu. Tendency. Or as an inclination of trying to become one with the Supreme Lord. Now going back to the previous purport, if not as a Vaishnav, oneness of the Supreme Lord in service, but the other kind. So in any case, that fruitive tendency, being an independent enjoyer, watch out. It's a fundamental driving principle of material existence, material consciousness is behind material existence, and it's something that Kapila Davis explaining to Devahuti, if you want to be relieved of the attachment to worldly existence, You have to give up fruitive disposition. Krishna alone is to be the enjoyer. To be continued. Any discussion? Yeah?
One comment, clarification question. Comment is that I find it interesting to see that like what impersonalists they consider to be their ultimate goal, just to merge into the merge into Krishna. We consider it to be like something which is the very reason why we are here, because of having that tendency to become one.
Mm.
It's like totally opposite end of the spectrum. The clarification question I have is, when we hear that Brahma went to Mahavishnu, what does exactly mean? Like he went to Vaikuntha? Because Mahavishnu, we know, like he's lying down on the causal ocean.
That's where Mahavishnu is, so that's where he goes.
So there are opportunities for even service there, like in terms of...
Doesn't say what happens there. The only thing service-wise that happens there that I'm aware of is Rama Devi is massaging his lotus feet. But apparently there's others that do other things.
Another clarification question I have is, when it is described that the Brahma comes back, is it that if he develops that separate interest, then he comes back, or it's like always?
It's certainly not always.
Okay. That's conditional.
Yeah. Lord Brahma in the second canto is situated in friendship. The Lord Brahma from Brahma Samhita is situated in conjugal love. The Lord Brahma that's being spoken of here has Hiranyagarbha, or something that's in this realm of neutrality, realization. So different, not always the same thing. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, in our journey to find our voice and to see how we want to serve Srila Prabhupada's movement, there is broader inspiration that I want to be a servant and I want to be in the mode of service. But while we're exploring the specific way, there are like two ways. One is either I can align to the existing system of services, or I can explore the inspiration I'm receiving. So the question I have is, how do I make sure that while I'm in that journey, I don't go into the territory of going in the independent self-interest? Of course, my understanding is that the guidance is one of the key principles, but other than that, how do I? Because it sounds like a... because aligning to the existing system, there's already protection because we are not doing anything new there, but when we are...
Well, it's not just the form, it's the consciousness behind the form. Mm-hmm. One could be doing something form-wise looks like what many others are doing, but consciousness-wise is off. So the most important is the consciousness component, and you know, then we have our different personalities. And with different personalities, some may, you know, go into radicals, some may, it may grow more organically than radically to match our personality. And so different ways of approaching. In your case, there's a very strong component is traditional, not exactly conventional, but traditional, and that feels right for you. That's my observation. And with that, you can give your fullness, and if it's not that clarity of this is what ancient tradition shows us, you're reluctant to go outside of that. You're a traditional. You find strength in that which is not just necessarily the form, but the essence is it's just a place of surety and safety and clarity. Let the individuality grow from that position, seems to me. It's not confining, it's safe and natural. The other type of persons that are very unconventional and extremely innovative, and you know, they may go off, find themselves going off in some direction and have to just cut it and, you know, restart all over again. It takes maturity to take a principle and grow a principle according to my nature, because very quickly principles, if they're not deeply rooted, they're gone. Not just fade, but they're gone. And then it's independence all over again. And the independent spirit and the turmoil that goes with that, you know, the happiness and apparent happiness. Oh, I found something I really like, and then it turns out to be foolishness. Listening to one's mind instead of being guided by scripture, and which is confirmed by Supersoul. I mean, guided by Supersoul, which is confirmed by Scripture, by the way around. It's being guided by the mind. And we've done that too much. Too much. So, individuality will come out. The safest way to grow one's spiritual life is it's like planting a garden. You plant so many seeds, and each plant is going to be a little different, although they're the same species, the same kind. Then you allow for individuality of expression of that seed and the next seed and the next seed. So, but grow in a standard way, because it's time-tested and there's a science behind it. Then individuality will come out. You don't have to worry about it. It'll come out. do it the other way, besides there's risk, it seems to me, it's excessive. Meaning, so let's say, look back at my devotional service, it could have been so many things. And I did certain things for some period of time, and then I did some other things for some period of time, did some other thing for some period of time, and then combination of those things for another period of time. And I'm not, you know, I did. Had I sat back and said, well, you know, what do I want, what, how do I want it to be? What's my individual expression? I might have just wasted a lot of time and energy. Instead, here's something that's needed, and do the needful. So I learned something, and I learned something, and learned something. But the mood was not what's specifically what's me, but the mood is some service. Standard service that's needed, okay, here's this one, here's that one. And then inside, discovering me. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.